Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Hey, this is Kenny Hickey from Silvertomb and Typo Negative, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hey, this is James Durbin of the band Durbin, and you are listening to Talking Metal.
Hey guys, welcome to Talking Metal. Before we get into the episode, I do want to thank Joey Vancheri. Dude, thank you for your monthly pledge on Patreon, and thank you for introducing me to a great band called Silvertomb. We're going to talk with Kenny per your suggestion, Joey. I listen to the people on Patreon that support me far more than publicists, far more than random people on Twitter. You guys ask me to interview somebody, I'm going to try to make it happen. I promise. Try my best. Sometimes it's hard, but even with Kenny from Silvertomb, it was, chase him down a little bit to get him on. But happy to do so, and so happy that I got turned on to this great band. Kenny, of course, is also known for his work with Typo Negative. So let's do this. Let's thank all these patrons. Victor Guzman. I don't know if I'm saying your name right, Victor. Glenn Watson. We already said Joey. Gene Eugene DX. Sean Richmond. Mario Charance. Andrew Miller. Jeremy Weltman. Chris Riley. Johan Enderstrom. Stephen Rodriguez. Tommy Anderson. Gregory Muse. Kenny McCrimmon. Leo from Alaska. Brad Dahl. Richard Langridge. Dan Gerwin, Jerry from Long Island, Sam Soupy, Drake, Matt Carroll, Joe Ryan, Jason Seth, Stephen Saylor, Ron Keel, Jean-Francois Blas, Anthony Mackey, James Bennett, David Gray, Fred Rutz, Michael Street, Mike Jones, Steve Hoker, John Bovary, and Metal Dan. Guys, you guys are awesome. Thank you for everything you do for me. And I'm just desperately trying to get up to 40 patrons. That's my goal right now. I'd love to have 100, but for the immediate future, I need 40. I'm not there, guys. It bums me out. I can't even get 40 people to give me support on Patreon. Please, I'm begging you. I know I sound desperate here, but $2 a month. It's nothing. There's somebody out there who enjoys this show who thinks it's worth $2 a month. Plus, you get bonus content, you know? So join me on Patreon for a small pledge. If you want to go a little bit more, like a $5 a month pledge, I will send you a t-shirt, Talking Metal t-shirt. Need your support, guys. Please, again, Patreon is the way to support. All right, let's get into the episode right now. We got on the podcast today, James Durbin from American Idol fame and Quiet Riot fame. Great talking with him. Cannot wait for you guys to hear this interview. And Kenny Hickey of Silvertomb, formerly of Typo Negative, with the great late Peter Steele, Johnny Kelly. Man, Typo Negative. I was such an enormous fan of them. The Bloody Kisses record was a very important record for me when I was in my 20s and kind of finding my way, becoming an adult in New York City. Really, really important record for me. Loved that record. And it felt like it was something new and fresh and different. And thank you, Kenny, for giving us that record along with your other Typo Typo Negative bandmates. We're going to talk with you in just a minute. My wife's going to come on a little bit later. And then after that, James Durbin. So again, let me just say how good Silver Tomb is. Great. And James Durbin, man, he's got some great new songs out. So I really, sometimes I do interviews just because I have to do them to, you know, I don't have to do any interviews, but I'll say, oh, great new record because I'm doing an interview. No, these guys, Silver Tomb is amazing. And the tracks that I've heard off of James Durbin's upcoming record are also a lot of fun, man. Fun is a good way to describe them. And rockin' and metal. All right, so let's do this. Let's take a quick look at some of the headlines, the news headlines, stuff that we saw this week. We saw Skid Row's guitarist Dave Snake Sabo has a new Gibson guitar coming out, right? Isn't that what he's doing interviews for? Actually, I'm not sure about that. I don't know. He's doing interviews about his mental health, I guess. Yeah, I think he's got a new guitar out too. But let's see. John Corabi announcing some online acoustic shows in February. I'm kind of sick of the online shows, guys. I don't know. Just really am. But, you know, I wonder how many people would actually pay to, or maybe they're not paying, would actually tune into a John Corabi acoustic show online. I hope a decent amount. Anthrax have a new comic book coming out, and members of the band will be contributing to it. It's by Z2 Comics, which is run by a good friend of mine, Josh. Love Josh. I should get him on the podcast. And cannot wait for Z2 and Anthrax to bring us the comic book. Z2 is also doing a Dio comic, so that should be interesting. Great stuff. So two little news items for you. Let's right now get into my interview with Kenny Hickey of Typo Negative and Silver Tomb. We're going to have a really cool conversation here. I hope you guys enjoy this and you go check out Silver Tomb. Sounds nothing like Typo, by the way, in my opinion. Nothing like it. Both great. Typo was great, but Silver Tomb, awesome. Awesome stuff. Imagine like old school Sabbath meets like old school Soundgarden, like before Soundgarden got commercial, like, you know, like Ultra Mega OK and Louder Than Love, like that era. Imagine that Soundgarden mixed with like Sabbath and like old school Ozzy era Sabbath. And that's kind of, it's hard to describe because it's got a unique original sound. But go check them out. I think they're great. I think they're great. Silver Tomb. And this is Kenny Hickey talking with me, Mark Striegel, here on Talking Metal. Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and what an honor for the first time on the show, Kenny Hickey, known for his work, of course, with Typo Negative, but also for the great new band, which I'm excited to talk to him about, Silver Tomb. How are you, Kenny?
Doing good. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great. And I got to tell you, the record you guys put out a little over a year ago, Edge of Existence by Silver Tomb, just great, great stuff. And I want to talk to you about some of the specific songs and the album in general. But first, let me just check in with you. How are you doing at this strange time in history with the COVID stuff and everything?
Well, you know, everybody's healthy on my side of things. You know, I have an 84-year-old mother. She has weathered the storm. She hasn't gotten it. I haven't lost anybody really close.
Good.
But, you know, I've been home a lot. So I'm building a studio, as you see behind me.
Right.
My ass off on that. I'm working on music, of course.
Cool. So I'm sorry, you said you just built the studio?
Just built it.
Nice.
Finishing touches now.
Wow. Very good. Congratulations. Excellent. So let's go back. It was a little over a year ago that you guys released the album Edge of Existence by Silver Tomb. And do you feel that the whole COVID thing maybe hurt the release of it? Because I mean, it really only been out a few months by the time we got to, you know, tours being canceled and lockdowns and all this other stuff.
Oh, my excellent timing once again.
Yeah.
Just pre-disease, we put out the record. You know, COVID came out. Basically I think we did one show.
Wow. Okay.
One headlining show right before that Christmas, which went great.
Yeah.
The St. Vitus in Brooklyn.
Cool.
And that was it. We were shut down, you know. Everything got shut down. So we were going to tour with Monster Magnet and do a full North American tour with them. Now we look forward to that. It'd have been great. So, yeah, it hurt the record. Of course it did. I mean, we literally didn't get to tour at all for it.
Right. Well, that's why I really wanted to bring listeners' attention to the record, because it is just a great listen. I mean, the songwriting's great, the playing's great, but I wanted to start off talking about your vocals, because I mean, if we go back to 2009 or so, when Seventh Void released their record with you on vocals and guitar, I mean, I feel like your vocals were great then, but they've even gotten better. I mean, you sound so awesome. Your voice. I mean, did you develop? Did you do practicing? Like, what has happened with your singing? Are you just evolving and getting better, or are you consciously making an effort to evolve as a singer?
Well, I mean, you know, it's a matter of perspective. Some people love it, some people hate it. But I think that I've been trying to refine it and make it my own more and more, and
combine
it with, you know, my favorite singing styles, you know, like Bon Scott and Ozzy Osbourne,
right?
You know, Chris Cornell. Trying to combine these elements and try to make something original out of it. You know, so it's growing. You know, yeah, it evolves over time.
Yeah, well,
It's definitely going to be to the next level on this next record. You know, which is, I'm in the middle of making that right now.
Oh wow. Okay. Cool. We'll talk about that. But while we're talking about this record, the Edge of Existence, again, the band Silver Tomb. And Kenny Hickey, guitars and vocals. That's who we're talking to right now, guys. You know, when I listened to it first, I didn't really think this, but after a few listens, I started wondering, is it a concept record? Because it seems like there's a lot of themes that go throughout the songs, and the way the songs all work together as a unit seems very complete to me.
It is. It's important to the... It's a structured record, definitely, and it's all segues, one song into the other. Most of them are, you know. I think it is, I wanted it to be an emotional blueprint of what, you know, I had been going through in the last 10 years. You know, that's really what I was going for. So it's like a roller coaster ride, you know.
But you wouldn't necessarily consider it a concept record, or is it kind of your journey? Is the concept, if you will, the theme?
Yeah, it would be. It's an emotional journey, you know, a purge, let's call it. But it doesn't have like this, you know, this laid out plot, you know, definite plot with a, you know, with the character, the main character, and all this stuff.
Right.
It's more an emotional blueprint, that's what I call it.
Wow, very, very good. And you know, it's the thing that I love about it is it takes you to some very, very dark places, doom, depression places, but there's this level of hopefulness that always seems to kind of creep through too, which really to me makes it an enjoyable ride as a listener, because you go to those dark places, but then there's other moments where you come out of them, and it's a fun journey as a listener.
That's, you know, it's great that you say that, because that's exactly, I guess, not what I was going for initially when it was being created. It's kind of what it became. Yeah. You know,
okay.
It started as the songs develop, sort of creating its own plot, its own timing, you know, its own story. When I realized that, I tried to bring it together as a ride, like you're describing.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, like anything in life, it's not just all darkness and depression. You know, there's moments of light and hope. I mean, that's why I'm still sitting here. If there wasn't, I wouldn't be sitting here anymore.
Right.
You know, and I've been through a lot in the last decade or so, you know. Lost a lot of close friends. You know, I had a career that was basically exploded, you know. Alcoholism, drug addiction, near divorces, all kinds of shit. You know?
Right.
I mean, regular life stuff, for the most part, most people go through these things, especially life-changing events. When it hit midlife, you know. Sometimes you lose your career, you lose your status, you lose your wife. You lose your money, all kinds of stuff happens, right?
Right.
And then some of us crack and some of us don't. I write music.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for the music. Cause again, just a awesome record. And I wanted to hit some of the songs. We won't hit every one, but So True, a song that really just, it hits you over the head with that riff and the vocal. But then again, kind of what, oh, go ahead.
It's great you mentioned it, because we just completed an animated video for the song. So,
oh, wow. Cool. One of my favorite songs off the record. I cannot wait to see
it. You're going to love the video. It's great. So that's going to be dropping soon.
Wow. Very cool. And the thing about this song is, again, you know, it hits you with that super hard part, but then the chorus is like truly kind of haunting. And I wondered if you have any memories of this song coming together.
Yes, I do. At the time, I was struggling with alcohol a lot. I've been sober now for a year, so I just...
Oh, congratulations.
And I was writing a lot. And drinking a lot. So, yeah, I'd stay up all night, drink, you know, 18 beers or whatever. And the lyrics for that song came out one morning when I had a bunch of the music written. And I was standing in front of my door, wasted at 8 o'clock in the morning. And people were getting in their cars and going to work around me.
Right.
You know, and I kind of hated him for it because I guess, you know, it was self-hatred turned outward, the lyrics in that song, especially in the verses, you know, and it's me screaming at the world. You know, I'm pissed off at them. You know, I'm never leaving normal lives.
Yeah.
Definitely healthier than me. I'm standing in front of my door, you know, stumbling. And so that's how the lyrics came about, basically.
Gotcha.
Yeah. The verses like self-hatred turn outward. And I did it reverses during the chorus. It's so you, it's so true means the stuff I'm trying to say about the world in the verses is what I'm really saying about myself. So it flips back around. It looks inward in the chorus.
Right on. Cool. And another song that I wanted to talk about, Rite of Passage, Crossing Over, you know, dark, simple lyrics, but yet the vibe, it's just so powerful. Love the ending where, which I guess is the instrumental part, which I guess is the crossing over part. Any, again, memories or insight you could share to that song or two songs?
Three songs.
Three songs. Okay.
That was the first, that was actually the song when it started with the verse, which is a kind of like this rock dirge doom verse, and then broke out into this very melodic chorus, right? That was the first piece of music we wrote that I was like, well, I hear like all this orchestration in here, you know, your strings and all this stuff, walking strings and horns, and you know, all this stuff could work here, but you know, we're a simple rock band, we didn't even have a keyboard player yet, you know. So that was the song. I was like, the hell with it, and I just went for it, put all these elements in without even having an extra member to even pull this off. So that's what really turned the band into, from Sevenfold into Silver Tomb. It changed the whole approach and the musical soundscape of the band. That song, the chorus for that song.
Wow. Okay.
So that's what maybe just made us just figure, let's start this, you know, fresh, a little fresh, and add Juice, Aaron Juice, my keyboard player, and just start fresh and new. And see where this takes us.
Cool. Yeah, great stuff. Another one, I love Waiting. I mean, I almost hear in the song Waiting, Screaming Trees, almost Mother Love Bone, you know, Soundgarden, old Soundgarden.
A lot of people say it's grungy. I mean, to me, it was just a rock song.
Yeah.
<I'm> not grungy.
Which is great, because I love those bands, you know, but yeah.
So do I. That was the song where it was another song where, you know, I was up writing all night. I was exhausted, frustrated. I think I was having some, you know, you always hit a wall with songs here. There's a musical problem here or there, or, you know, a key problem. And I think I was just really frustrated. I had my acoustic guitar and I was sitting down, and that song came out literally in 5 minutes, the whole song.
Wow.
So it was one of those, you know?
Yeah.
And, where it just happens, and it happens perfectly. Yeah. Rare moment, but.
An interesting part of the listening voyage of this record is Sleeping on Nails and Wine, which is almost got that insanity vibe to it. I don't know why that pops to my head, but it you know, almost like that Syd Barrett, you know, Pink Floyd-y vibe going on there. Any memories of that specific song? Because it is kind of a unique song among the bunch.
That is the one specific song that's directly written for Peter Steele.
Wow. Okay.
About Peter sleeping on nails and wine, because, you know, Peter made his own bed of nails to sleep on. So he tortured himself his whole life, and, you know, would try to drown it out with wine. So hence the title.
Wow.
And Peter basically was my Syd Barrett.
Okay.
So that's, okay. You got it. That's exactly where it was coming from. You know, it's a lullaby. I try to capture Peter. He's a very complex person. You can't capture anybody with a 2-minute, 3-minute song, but just a piece of him, and try to capture what he tried to do.
Right.
He's trying to accomplish most of the time.
Wow. Great stuff. And again, Edge of Existence by Silvertomb. It's a must listen, guys. You got to check it out. We're talking with Kenny, who, of course, has a massive history and legendary history with Type O Negative. You just mentioned Peter. It is 2021. I cannot believe it's been, this year will be 25 years since October Rust. So we're talking the 25-year anniversary of October Rust by Type O Negative. Any memories you could share with the listeners of that coming together or recording it, or just how you feel about it 25 years later?
I remember it being a turning point. I mean, at that point of our career, everything was a turning point. You know, we put out the first record, you know, not much happened. And then, you know, Bloody Kisses worked really hard for it, and it blew up, you know, and it looked like we had a lot of great things on the horizon for us. So it was, we were under a lot of pressure and tension with that record. And I remember just having a lot of high expectations for it, and the label also having very high expectations for it. And I also remember it being, we were well aware that it was a risk because it deviated from the original style of the band. You know, it might not seem so much now, but at the time it was apparent that it was a different approach, a different direction. So it was risky, and it did prove to be a challenge for us to break the record. It was harder than Bloody Kisses, I think, because maybe there was less of an eclectic element to it. I don't know, but it took longer to catch on that record. So I remember being a time of a lot of tension, you know, a lot of expectation, and quite not getting to where we wanted to, or we had expected to. I mean, the label expected us to sell 5 million copies or something like that, which
wow.
is just anyway, but you yeah. know, so yeah, it was a hard time.
Right.
It should have been, you know, I look back on it now and I'm like, wow, this is the greatest time of my life. It was just, like, in my 20s. I had nothing to lose.
Yeah.
I was in a great band. You know what I mean? We had fans all over the world. It was torn. But, you know, as usual, you get caught up in it. You know, there's a lot of pressure involved, too. It's not, you know, being in a band, it's just not all fun and games.
Right on. Right on. And I wanted to also, let's see, go back and talk about Seventh Void. Only one record from that band, although, correct me if I'm wrong, but all the members of that band are currently in Silvertomb with some more, right?
Not all.
No?
Matt
okay.
Brown, Matt Brown was the original, the second guitar player in Seventh Void.
Okay.
So Joe James is now my guitar player.
Okay.
In this band. And I have Aaron Juice in it. So the original Matt, Johnny's in it.
Who's right.
And Henry.
Hank. Henry,
yeah.
right.
Yeah. yeah.
Cool. And you, the record that you guys did, Heaven Is Gone by Seventh Void, was produced by the late, great Vinnie Paul. Any memories of him working with you guys in the studio? What kind of producer was he? Was he a real hands-on guy or more laid back?
Well, he didn't fully produce it. Matt Brown produced it. And we produced it in Brooklyn and got all the tracks down. And then we had actually felt we were too close to it and that we needed somebody else to mix it.
You know?
So Johnny thought, like, well, why don't we send it, you know, to Vinny, you know, and see what he thinks. And he was, at the time, he was starting a big Vin Rat Records.
Right.
I didn't expect this to happen, but he was like, I love this stuff. I want to sign you guys.
Wow.
You're like, I just want you to mix the record. You're going to mix the record. Yeah, he's going to mix the record. And he loved this stuff so much. It was like, well, this guy really believes in this shit. Let's just do it. And we signed with him. We signed with Big Vin Records. Went over to Texas, had a blast, you know?
Yeah.
And he really turned it around. I mean, you know, it definitely was a sonic challenge to mix. And he completely turned it around and turned it into something that, you know, was listenable. You know, made it kick ass, made it come out of the speakers.
Okay, cool. So he wasn't listed as the producer, or he was? Because I know Wikipedia has him down as the producer of the record.
Well, you know, Wikipedia.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But right. yeah, he's down as a producer and a mix engineer.
You know,
it's Matt Brown. He's down as a producer too. So
yeah. And you mentioned that Silvertomb is working on new music. When do you think we might be hearing some of that?
Well, I just finished this room here in my house, and I have a couple of songs tracked as far as guitars and vocals go. So I know it's going to be, I got to get Johnny in here. We got to get the rhythm section down. So it's written. It's completely written. So I'm looking at probably like 3 months, 4 months before I'm finished doing it. And then, you know, release time, I'm hoping autumn, which would be perfect. Okay. You know, yeah. I want to kind of like time it anyhow to where this whole pandemic is tapering off, you know, hopefully.
So is it too early for you guys to be booking dates, or are you already planning?
To book anybody right now. You know, we have this Psycho Las Vegas festival thing in August 21st, I believe it is. So that's been reinstated. That was one of the original shows we had before the pandemic broke out.
Right.
So that's going to happen. I think Danzig is headlining it. So that's the only show we have booked right now. And let's hope that happens. And that doesn't go away. You know, who knows what's going on with this pandemic? Who knows what's going to be going on in August?
Good. Well, we hope that can get Silvertomb back out there live, because like I said, I've never seen you guys live, and the record just blows my mind. So I'm totally psyched to see you guys live and hear new music from you, and wishing you all the best. Keep doing what you're doing, and thank you for this great music.
Thank you, buddy.
Okay, I have ventured up into the bedroom on a Saturday night here in Maplewood, New Jersey, and I'm saying hi to my wife, Emily. Hi, how are you? How are you?
Long time no see.
Yeah, yep. And
thanks
for
helping me unload the groceries.
Oh, you're welcome. And we are just getting through this quarantine thing. So, you know, I don't know. I hope everyone is staying safe and getting their vaccines if they can. And Emily, I just wanted to thank you, because you work for Johnson & Johnson, and you guys really have done a service to the world with this one shot vaccine, which is on the way. I really hope that it gets approved quickly in this country, and it seems like one more great option for finally kicking COVID to the curb, hopefully. Exactly. Sooner than later. And yeah, and
it's
it's
been really weird and strange, because I've done this my entire life. I've managed clinical trials, right? So it's kind of what all of us have planned for our entire life, is something like this, an opportunity to really make an impact. So watching the trial from start to finish, and the people who work on it, some of them didn't take any kind of time over the holidays.
Right.
It's been amazing to see the way that company came together to make it work.
Absolutely. And I've just seen how hard you're working, and just wanted to thank you in this public setting too. It's awesome. And also wanted to give a shout out to Gene Eugene from Patreon. I wanted to read his note that he sent me. He says, "Hi, Mark. I'm listening to Too Mean to Die." That's the new Accept record. "Sounds good to me, even if I miss Peter on bass. CD is a tad expensive on Amazon. That is weird. They must want us to buy through Nuclear Blast. I was wondering how Stalingrad, I always have trouble pronouncing that. This is a couple albums ago, right? So you're asking why the Stalingrad album cover got changed. I don't know, Emily. So I did a little research, and they definitely did seem to change the album cover of the Stalingrad album, which is Accept record from a number of years ago. Recently, though, you know, the new version of Accept.
Was there something offensive about it?
I don't know. It looked communist. It had a communist vibe look to it. It was real plain. Maybe they wanted it to look less Russian, less communist. That's what I'm wondering. So it went from that kind of real basic.
When did they redo it?
I don't know. I don't even know for sure that they did, but that's Gene Eugene is saying they did. And from my quick Google search before recording this, it did look like they did. It's now.
Do you still have Wolf's phone number?
Yeah, I could call him, right? I would think that would be a label thing. You know, it's definitely jazzed up now. It appears they added the bird and the guitar necks.
What, jazzy Stalingrad?
Yeah, I think it looks better originally how it was personally, but Stalingrad. So I researched what is Stalingrad. On April 10th, 1925, the city was renamed Stalingrad. I don't know what it was called before that, in honor of Joseph Stalin from the Communist Party. This was officially to recognize the city and Stalin's role in its defense against the whites between 1918 and 1920. I don't know who the whites were, but yeah. And then there was, of course, the Battle of Stalingrad, which was a brutal military campaign between the Russian forces and those of Nazi Germany and the Axis powers during World War II. So I don't know. I don't know why they changed it. But they definitely, it appears that they, not definitely, it appears that they changed it. So good catch, Gene Eugene. And Gene Eugene goes on, even without music, talking metal, he's talking about the podcast. When you talk about, let's say, Caius, I pause a bit and use Spotify and come back. Oh, so you're actually, when I talk about the music, you pause the podcast
that's
and you
awesome.
Go, yeah, so that's great. He said, the classic album segment is very cool. Thank you. We are kind of not doing that this week, but it will resume next week, Gene. And then you say Metal Heart, which is one of my classic albums by Accept, is a good album, even if it sounds thin. Restless and Wild is the one for me. Talking Metal is as good as Eddie Trunk. Well, better, because you don't keep interrupting people you talk to. All right, peace.
No, that's my job.
And what about the album cover change? Okay, so we already spoke about the album cover change. I don't really have an answer for you, although I agree with you. It does look like they changed it. Let's break this down. You mentioned Spotify. Big news, Emily. I told you earlier, we are officially back on Spotify.
Awesome.
And that, it's all a little blurry to me, guys, but it does appear that that has something to do with us removing the music from the podcasts. So we are back on Spotify. There you go. Now, here's the deal. The old Spotify feed is still up there, and it's like a ghost feed. It's dead with no episodes, but they've added another Talking Metal feed. Now, the even more bizarre thing is Spotify has their own podcast called Talk Metal or something, which is, we should probably sue them for that. But but anyways, when you search Talking Metal, there's a bunch of shows that come up before it. And that just might mean that we don't have any subscribers because it was literally just added days, like a day or so ago, back into the rotation. So anyone who is now getting their podcast through Spotify, you just need to search it, scroll down through all the podcasts that you see, and it'll eventually be there. You'll actually see it twice. Obviously, the one you want to subscribe to is the one that has the actual episodes and isn't blank when you click on it. And again, if you had previously subscribed to the podcast through Spotify, we've been kicked off of there for at least 6 months at this point, probably maybe even a year, I don't know. You will have to, again, resubscribe to the new feed on Spotify. So back to Eugene's letter. You're saying that Metal Heart sounds thin. I have to disagree with you on that. It's really interesting because to me, like a lot of these new albums, Emily, that are like produced where it's just like the guitars go directly into
the
board. We've
talked about this so many times.
You know,
they sound thin.
Yeah, yeah. To me, the Metal Heart album does not sound thin, but yet you can hear all the little nuances and the things are clearer in some ways. So maybe that makes it thinner to you. I don't know. I would just disagree with you on that.
It's one thing, I'm sorry, that you really get your money. You get what you pay for. In
right.
music, like as far as production goes, don't you think? Like,
yeah,
like good board, good production, good mixing actually matters like big time to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you listen to a record like Balls to the Wall or Metal Heart, I can literally hear the tubes in Wolf's Marshall, and I just don't hear that anymore with the newer Accept record. Yeah, so there you go. I did want to jump over to Twitter because somebody was asking me what I was. Let's see if I still have it here. Yeah, somebody was asking me on Twitter. They said, yes, I have the new Accept album. I purchased it on CD, even though I have a Spotify subscription. Trying to figure out what you were asking Wolf about the first two songs. Undertaker is sort of an update of Princess. Okay, so what I was asking Wolf about the first two songs, which he disagreed on with me, was were they going to accept as a band going to new musical territory there? Because those songs didn't really, to me, have a classic Accept vibe to them, where some of the songs later in the album did. He disagreed. He, you know, said that since they've been working with Mark and, you know, the new version of Accept, that they had actually done songs in that style. So fair enough. I just felt like those first couple songs to me seemed different and new. And if it's funny, if you listen to the interview towards the end, we kind of come back around and he says, well, with the new members, I feel like we're kind of, you know, maybe going into some new musical territory, which is all I was trying to say at the beginning of the interview. And I kind of felt like he validated what I said and he originally disagreed with at the top of the interview. So there you go. That's just me. So Emily, one of our favorite records, I know we both share this love mutually, is we'll talk a little bit about this since we're not doing an official classic album segment during this show, Heaven and Hell by Black Sabbath. And some really interesting thing happened over the last few days. Jeff Nichols, who is the longtime keyboardist of the band Black Sabbath, his estate released a tape of Jeff, Bill Ward, Ronnie Dio, and Tony Iommi playing what could be the first demo or first version of the song Heaven and Hell.
They released this?
And it's pretty cool. Yeah. Now,
what's it sound like? I haven't heard it.
Yeah, it sounds really cool. Now Jeff is playing bass on it. Now Geezer, if you don't know, guys, Geezer was away from Black Sabbath at that time. And if you read any of Martin Popoff's books on Black Sabbath, he came back into the fold with Black Sabbath real late into the Heaven and Hell sessions. And Jeff Nichols, who is the band's keyboardist, has always claimed that that song basically came together before, and most of the songs, before Geezer was back in the band. And there's been some speculation, I know, in the Martin Popoff books that Jeff, even though he doesn't have a songwriting credit, I mean, that bass line, that that was him. Well, that was him. And Jeff said...
Wrote it?
Jeff said he wrote it. He always claimed that he wrote it, even though he didn't get songwriting credit. And Geezer, Jeff claimed that Geezer told him, I would have never played that. It's too simple, you know? So it's very interesting.
There's something to be said for simple.
Yeah, and it's very interesting to hear this early version of Heaven and Hell before Geezer had rejoined Sabbath. And it is also, they note on the demo tape that his estate released, nowhere does it say Sabbath, because I think at that point they weren't even sure if they were going to call it Sabbath. But he definitely came up with that thumping bass line. I would say Geezer's bass line on the final one is a lot better, but of course Geezer is a bass player, Jeff is not. But there's a lot of stuff in there. Even some of the fills Jeff does, you can tell Geezer kind of took those and refined them and made them better. But yeah, the fact that the song is credited to Bill Ward, Tony Iommi, Geezer Butler, and Ronnie James Dio, and not Jeff Nichols, to me, this has proven that is very incorrect. But you know, a lot of times they just split things four ways back in the day, mm-hmm. and maybe Jeff was not an official member of the band, but it sounds like he was highly influential in helping that song come together. There were a couple other songs on the record that Geezer was musically more involved with that were like leftover Ozzy era songs. Like I believe Die Young and possibly Children of the Sea were songs they had started writing with Ozzy.
I could hear that. Yeah.
And so it's been reported that Geezer was more involved musically with those songs, whereas a lot of the other songs on Heaven and Hell, he literally just came in and did the bass lines at the end of it.
I'm a fan of a simple bass line.
Yeah. And there's some real cool stuff in the demo. Like when they get to that refrain at the end, you know how the song goes into this new section at the end? You've seen the lights of Carousel, blah, 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 you know, that part. There's a little nuance that isn't on the final version where they do this little run after some of the lyric phrases on the guitar and bass, which in retrospect it works better without it, but it's
just
kinda,
the lyrics, it's just like this flow of like the vocal, right?
Yeah So great stuff. It's a fun listen for sure. If you haven't seen it, it's up on Blabbermouth and all the news websites. But yeah, Jeff Nichols probably should have gotten a songwriting credit on that song specifically, Heaven and Hell, with the new demo surfacing.
I mean, I want to hear it now because that part of the song is so intense, and it seems like it would lose its momentum entirely if you chopped it up and had little musical interludes chopping up the vocals. It doesn't.
It's hard to explain without hearing it.
Yeah, I gotta listen to it.
And it's subtle, but there are some subtle differences. And it's a demo. I mean, you can tell that the song is not in final form. Like, it's like 8 minutes long. There's longer sections. Mm-hmm. Dio's voice sounds incredible. It's them actually playing live, just recorded on a cassette. You know, so it's really, really something else. And I mean, I will say you can hear that Jeff is not a bass player, but on the flip side, some of those definitive bass sounds that we now know as part of one of the greatest heavy metal songs ever seem to have originated with him and may have been refined by Geezer Butler for the final song. So interesting stuff there. Very good. And I can't help but think that possibly that recording we heard of Jeff playing bass with Tony, Ronnie, and Bill was possibly recorded in Barry Gibb's house,
right,
in Miami. We just had Stephen Gibb on the show because that's where they went to work on Heaven and Hell. And I actually, if you haven't heard that interview, Stephen and I speak about that and how much history that house has, which apparently he now lives across the street from the house. But it's not just Heaven and Hell. I mean, there's like Clapton stayed there.
Is Barry still there?
His dad, I think, is in a different, they're still all in the same area, but his dad is in a different location. But, you know, there was this house that Barry would rent out when he'd be on the road with the Bee Gees. And I guess his family came with him. I don't know, but, you know.
Is it the one that's right on the water with the fence he was walking around in the documentary?
It could have been. I'm not sure if they took him back to that location.
I'm talking about the new Bee Gees. Yeah. Did you talk about the new Bee Gees documentary
already?
Yeah, we
did in the previous episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's that house, that same house is on one of Eric Clapton's albums. It's on the album cover. I forget what album that is, actually, but there you go. So, Emily, again, when can we get back to concerts? You're the expert with this. Before I let you go, you're involved with Johnson & Johnson, with the studies. Your predictions have been far better than mine. I'm hoping that we can still get back to concerts this summer. Fauci's saying this fall. They just canceled Coachella in April. Our friend Ian is texting me saying, hey, M3 is still happening in late April, which I can't imagine in Maryland that's going to happen. But what are your thoughts?
I think fall is more realistic, to be honest. Maybe some summer festivals, like outdoor. But until we get the variants are what we're concerned about right now, right? And we have to be nimble as the pharmaceutical industry and everyone developing the vaccines have to be nimble in figuring out if we can find boosters that attack the variant, because obviously we're finding the vaccine isn't as effective. So we have three variants so far, and there will be more emerging. So I think it's too early to say, hey, we're in the clear with the vaccine, but everyone needs to get vaccinated, period. Because the only way to stop the mutations is by stopping the virus, right?
Right.
So everyone has to get vaccinated, period, ASAP. And, you know, I think we have the opportunity to make that happen in the next few months.
Sounds like it. So let's, fingers crossed. I'm still hoping for this summer, but maybe it'll be this fall. And without further ado, let's now get into my interview with the former singer of Quiet Riot, James Durbin, a guy that Emily and I used to root for when he was on American Idol back in the day. And he jammed with Zach and played heavy metal, the song Sammy Hagar wrote for the movie. He played that on American Idol, I believe, with Zach on guitar, and then he had Priest on, and we're going to talk about all that. Well, not the Zach stuff, but the Priest performance on American Idol during this interview. So let's do it. This is James Durbin, who has some great new music out. He's going to tell us all about it, and okay, thanks, Emily. Here we go. Where should people connect with you online?
I'm on Twitter, Emily Striegel, @ Emily Striegel, or I'm on Instagram, space.pony. I'm on Facebook too, so come find me on Facebook. Although Facebook, man, I'm really bad.
Yeah.
I've I probably have over 100 friend requests that I haven't responded
to. Yeah, so don't friend her on Facebook.
I'm just bad with Facebook.
Thank you, Emily. We appreciate it. And here we go. James Durbin here on Talking Metal. Hey, it's Mark Striegel with Talking Metal. And what an honor to speak with James Durbin again. He has some great new music out, which we're going to talk about. James, last time we had an interview, we lost you mid-interview, and you were like on the road, I think, somewhere, touring, and that was it. So it was kind of an awkward ending. So I hope we have a little more of an official ending to this interview today.
Yep. Can you hear me? Yeah. Of course. Yeah. I'm sorry that happened. I do remember that. Yeah, that was quite unfortunate. But we've had some wind here today, and I haven't lost an interview yet.
So, okay. All right. Well, fingers crossed.
I don't plan on starting now. Yeah. Especially with the track record. We got to redeem ourselves.
Right on. Right on. And I tell you, man, The Beast Awakens, out February 12th by Frontiers. Great stuff, man. I heard your other solo records. I've heard your stuff with Quiet Riot. This seems to be, in my opinion, someplace new for you in the recording, spectrum, someplace new. And I love it, man. I mean, we can hear all the classic metal influences from Dio to Maiden to Judas Priest. And I want to talk to you about those influences. But first of all, I didn't know that you play guitar, and you're doing most or all the rhythm guitar playing on that. Is this true?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I've been playing guitar since I was 10 years old. First guitar was a hand-me-down. I got that in a chord book of Elvis songs. Taught myself Heartbreak Hotel in the first few weeks. And, the rest is the rest. But you know, this album, I first started working on it just before COVID hit. And I had already written the title track, The Beast Awakens.
Right.
And but I was kind of looking for outside writers. I was trying to see, like, okay, you know, everybody in the rock game does this and collaborates with different, you know, writers. And I've done it for my first three albums, actually. And but then COVID hit and I was back to myself. And I was like, you know what? I've already got this one under my belt. I'm really digging it. I see where I could go from here. Like, I'm just going to take this as a challenge and write this whole thing myself.
Cool. Cause that was my next question. Who did the songwriting? And wow. So everything you wrote on your own, and do you demo the stuff up? Like, how, what's the writing process? Do you just sit down with the guitar and turn on, you know, your iPhone and record it? Or are you actually demoing stuff up, like with drums and bass and everything?
So yeah, I wrote every single song, every melody, every riff, every lyric, you know, all of it. So when I demo, I mean, that as I'm writing them, as I'm writing that, I'm human, and a father and a parent and a husband. So
right on.
It all comes crashing through the door. So when I'm writing a song, I'll use my phone, use my voice memos. And so that's how a lot of these riffs were conceived. The title track, take that for instance, The Beast Awakens itself, the riff. That was a literal voice memo on my phone, and still is. And I took it, took my guitar to it and transposed it, and it was in the same key. And it was just luck, you know, that way. And continue to write the song. But yeah, when I demo a song, I'll put it in, I'll grab my guitar and open up my laptop or get on my computer and open up Logic Pro. And I work in Logic, and I recorded my entire previous album, Homeland, on Logic, and did all that. So, I work very fast sometimes in lieu of making sure the guitar is in tune, just so that I can get the song out. And I'll usually set the click, and then I'll play the guitar riff, a really rough version of it, or as much as I have. And sometimes I'll just make stuff up. If I don't have a bridge, I'll just find one as I record.
Right.
And maybe that'll stick, you know. It just sometimes works out that way. But Then I'll add drums to it, some just like programmed drums and a shitty bass, and get the vocal down. Start getting those lyrics worked out. Sometimes the lyrics are already there. Like I've had lyrics where I had those written and then had to find what is this song itself. So yeah, I did that for every single song.
Wow, that's amazing. And great.
Yeah, thank you. And what's different with this album from other albums that maybe a majority of people do, I feel, is they write a lot of different songs and then they kind of pick, you know, what songs are worthy of here. Friends of mine write 80 songs and pick 9 for an album. Like, what?
Wow.
So yeah, it's commendable. I mean, gosh, I don't see how I could get myself to get there. I'm sure I could if I had to, like I made this record, but it's just, you know, some things are some things. But yeah, so I wrote every song on this album, because I felt like that song needed to be where it ended up.
Right on, right on. And what other musicians, I know you have some special guests on Kings before you, but just in general, like with the guitar solos, and is there a bass player and drummer joining you on the record? Who else plays on this record?
Yes, I'm super grateful and thankful to have the incredible Mike Vanderhuel on drums, who has been in California metal band, classic metal band YNT. He's been with them for the past 15 years,
right,
as
on.
Well as studied under Steve Smith of Journey.
Wow.
So his credentials are wonderful, and his playing is just top notch. I've considered myself very fortunate to have gotten the chance to play with, you know, incredible drummers in a short span of time. And I consider him among those. He's very, very, very great. And he is joined by Barry Sparks on bass, the incomparable Barry Sparks, who's played with Dokken, Ted Nugent,
yes, yep.
Michael Schenker Group, Bees, big group in Japan, many, many others. And very grateful to have him on board, because his playing just took these songs to completely new places, far, far away from my shitty bass. Far, right. Far away. Expanded upon things and caught intricacies and nuances and things that I was playing on guitar, things I was doing with my vocal, and capitalized on those and really brought those specialties to this album. He is incomparable. That's the only word. And then, little me, playing rhythm guitar. And then on, electric guitars, I got a bunch of friends to play on it. So,
cool.
You know, not famous friends, just good brothers and
good guitar players.
Great yeah. guitar players. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So my good friend Nick Gallant provides a solo for the Prince of Metal. And he actually, funny, he performed guitar and vocals for Guitar Hero.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, for Guitar Hero 2 and like that really big... When that really exploded, he was all over that vocals and guitar work, you know, playing these like re-recordings of Dio and Iron Maiden and such. So
oh, cool.
Having to retrack those solos and make them sound like you're used to them sounding is no easy feat. So he was one of the guys that was involved with that. And then in addition, Dylan Rose, who played on my first solo album, Memories of a Beautiful Disaster. He's all over that as well. That was my first touring guitar player. And then John Yaden Jr., who's from a band out of Austin, Texas, called Trine. And then my very good friend and most recent guitar player, Mark Putnam, plays on
cool.
too.
Cool. And then I did mention earlier the Kings Before You song. There's some pretty good, big special guests on that song. Can you tell us who those are?
Absolutely. I've got Phil Demmel from formerly of Machine Head, Violence, BPMD, killer, you know, veteran guitar player who just tackles every bit of that solo section. There's some great stuff that my bass player Barry Sparks provided on that. And the way that Phil came into it with that solo is he shredded where he could shred, but he didn't try to shred where, you know, it didn't need it. He played what the song needed. and didn't need, and I didn't give anybody throughout the album, I gave no one direction. I gave no one an idea of what I wanted anything to sound like. I wrote the songs, I demoed them the way I wanted them to sound like. People heard the demos, but then their parts are their own parts.
Right on, right on. Yeah. And I did want to talk about the music videos for Prince of Metal and Kings Before You, because we didn't mention the other special guest on that song. We need to mention that, because that's a big name. Sorry.
Yes,
go for it.
No, it's a very new young man in the world of professional wrestling and rock and roll. Just debuted. Mr. Chris Jericho handles guest vocals on Kings Before You with myself. And Chris Jericho and I became friends back in 2011. I was on American Idol. He was on Dancing with the Stars, and they filmed in the same building.
Oh, wow.
And just two studios within the same building, like a hangar, CBS studios in LA. And so we hit it off. We started hanging out. He started sneaking me out of their guidance and taking me to the Hollywood Bowl to see Rod Stewart and Stevie Nicks, and then getting me mobbed by, like, you know, that's our the Idol fan base, you know, is that age of housewives and husbands,
right,
and their kids and stuff. So that was quite a spectacle. But I've always wanted to get Chris on a song together with myself, and, you know, I knew that he's a metalhead, of course, and I hit him up. I texted him one day and was like, if you were to hypothetically sing on a kind of concept album, what kind of character would you want to play? Because this is as I'm writing the songs. And so, like, I can write something tailor-made for him. And he said, well, either a villain or a wizard. And I was like, oh, shit, yeah. Kings Before You, man. So I sent them the song, you know. His verse is, when your kingdom is collapsing, your fortress disappears. Every serpent's in a whisper, coiling lies around your ears. Shed the dead skin from around you. Purge what enemies are near, moving fast to burn their bridges. Guiding light will soon appear. Yes, you are the defender of the land, from the hills to the horizon, from the holy to the desperate and the damned. You are the kings before you that reigned before. You became the heir to the throne. And like the kings before you, I can assure you, will never stand alone.
Nice. No. Great stuff.
And he was in.
Yeah.
He was in. Yeah.
Right on. And that kind of leads to the segue to where I was going with the music videos. He does that little, I guess he's not actually in the video, but you hear him in the video for Kings Before You at the beginning of it. And then you have the other video for Prince of Metal. The one thing about these videos, and I could even apply this to the album too, but it's very obvious in the videos, is we're having fun here. You know, I mean, this is, you know, sometimes metal, it's so dark and people take it almost too seriously and sometimes they don't embrace that fun, or might even say the cheesiness of it all. And I feel like you're able to do that and make it work on these songs. And is that something that you recognize, that, hey, we're not going to take this so seriously. We're going to have fun with it. We're going to embrace the cheese.
Well, of course, I my alma mater is American Idol. And before that is musical theater and metal, you know, playing in metal bands as well. So it's that's, you know, the only bands I played in growing up were metal bands or hard rock bands. And so this is where I come from. This is like my outlook on metal, and I love Dio, and I love, you know, just that, you know, look at Sacred Heart 84, you know, and like within this 11 minute performance of this performance piece, which is what it really is, you know, set to a song from an album, is like, you know, he's on stage, he's got like Crypt Keepers, and this dragon pops up from the drums, and he grabs a lightsaber and he slices open its stomach, and out comes out like this, like this neon light heart that's just pulsating and glowing. And this all happened in front of an audience, and people paid for this, and people fucking loved it.
Yeah.
And I love it. I still love it. And to me, it's like, they might be up there acting serious, but I mean, Ronnie's always like throwing a smile when he's throwing the horns at somebody, and like, it's not all so serious.
Yeah. And I you think know? That's I mean, important Jethro, to have
Jethro
fun
Tull
with it.
Jethro Tull rocked. Jethro Tull freaking rocked, but like, they're still like, homie's still up there like skipping, you know, playing flute. You know, he's playing the flute. I mean, it's only so metal you can make it. He's playing incredibly, but there's only so much that you can take it seriously, you know, in those within the confines of this genre.
Right
now. And it's look at those Dio videos, look at the Holy Diver video, look at Rock and Roll Children, you know, any of that stuff. It's like there's this Tolkien. What's that other movie? I can't think of it. But anyway, you know, Never Ending Story.
There's
that sort of like a vibe to it. And it's of the era of the 80s and just this classic metal time. And it's just like everything else 80s is back and has been back and has been played with and messed with. And I feel like this is done less in the US.
Yeah.
That I've seen.
I mean and that's so true. I mean, from like even like a show like Stranger Things or something like that. I mean, it's all coming back, so full circle.
Yeah, I mean, there's different like hair metal and stuff, you know, Steel Panther guys and like taking over that side, but like this side I feel like is a little bit less, you know, gone after.
Right.
And it's just that fan base is still there and people still love that.
Right on. And the monster that we see in these two music videos, could this become almost the you know, the monster to Durbin, kind of like what Eddie is to Maiden?
I'd have to ask him.
Okay.
That's up to Gronk. That's Gronk. Up to Gronk.
Is his name Gronk?
Yeah, that's up to Gronk. I mean, shit, I'm sure he'd be stoked on it. I mean, he'd want a percentage, obviously, because he is a real person, a real orc. Yeah, Gronk is from a band of orcs called A Band of Orcs. And,
okay.
Fortunately, as the legend goes, Hail Gazoroth, some kids were playing Dungeons and Dragons near a tourist attraction here in Santa Cruz in the mountains called the Mystery Spot. And they rolled a 7 and they rolled the Dungeon Master told them it was a band of orcs. And a portal opened up and out of this portal walked a literal band of orcs.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
And they're here to stay now?
So,
the portal closed behind them, or do they still travel back?
No, they still travel back to Herntodia.
Okay.
I first came aware of them back in my pre-idol days around town here, and we played a couple Battle of the Bands things with them. And I just thought it'd be a great idea to invite Gronk into this realm.
Definitely works for me. I'm digging it. So to kind of segue off the album that we've been talking about, The Beast Awakens by Durbin, to a little bit of your past. I got to tell you, James, when I was at M3 in 2019, you guys, Quiet Riot, that is, you were playing with them at the time. That was the highlight of my weekend. Out of all those great bands, You just had so much energy up there and delivered those songs the way us old school Quiet Riot fans wanted to hear those songs. So much fun. And I know I didn't follow the blow by blows when you left the band, but I know you left obviously before Frankie passed. How do you look back on your time with Quiet Riot?
I the M3 show is one of my favorite shows I've ever played in my entire life, and just I watched that footage recently, a part of it just to remind myself like the headspace I was in, you know. I mean, that would end up being almost the last time I played with Frankie, but he ended up coming when we did the music video, like the last video we did. We played two shows that weekend also, which were great shows. I mean, it was kind of rough seeing them like that, but
yeah.
They were great shows, and great memories, and except I broke my phone, but it fell in the bathroom,
right.
But anyway, I don't know. I'm very grateful for that time. I'm grateful for the wisdom I gained. I'm grateful for the shows we played, the memories we made, celebrating people's birthdays on the road. You know, I had to miss, it was the first Halloween I've ever missed, not spending it with my wife and kids. And we ended up in like Suquamish, Washington on this like casino reservation. We were playing the next day with Skid Row, and Alex and I decided to enter this costume contest they were having there, and we won second and third place. we each made it out with like $200. Like, it was like a good prize too. He was Ozzy Osbourne and I was Macho Man Randy Savage, and just like, you know, stuff like that, like getting the guys out of their rooms to go to the go-karts and arcade across the street because I'm, you know, much younger than they are, and I'm still into that shit, and I love just like having fun.
Right on. And you did two records with Quiet Riot, and I don't know, especially when I listen to The Beast Awakens, the production is so alive, and I just felt like those Quiet Riot records that you did, they had really great moments, but there was something, and correct me if you disagree, but there was something that was flat about the production on those records that I feel like hindered my listening enjoyment of them. Does that ring home with you at all?
I don't listen to them.
Right. Okay.
I know what you're talking about. There's things that happen in production that, you know, I don't understand how they happened. And even when I, you know, made note of them, they continued with those mistakes. So there's mistakes on both the studio albums that, you know, aren't supposed to be the way they are. Like one of the guys that wrote one of the songs, like, the vocal I delivered, they somehow moved it, and like it works, I guess, if I had sung it that way, but it's not the way that one of the songwriters wrote it. And that always bothered me. There's like a harmonica solo on the first album and just different stuff. But yeah, I mean, not my circus, not my monkey. And you know, Durbin is all me, you know.
Right on.
Yeah, with that I was given completed music tracks and told, okay, well, here's what you have, write to it. There's just like, there's no room for changing anything, for fixing anything. And, you know, there's not really, I don't call that production.
Yeah. Well, again, we're talking with James Durbin, guys, of the band Durbin, and it is officially a band, right, James? I mean, you plan to keep this unit together as Durbin?
You know, it remains to be seen for the time being, yes. But it's much like a Dio thing, you know, it doesn't really necessarily matter who's in the band, because the name is the guy and the guy is the name. And right, so it's much like it has been with me doing my James Durbin, you know, band and tours and stuff. You know, but I like to keep each sort of thing its own sort of thing. With my previous band, I consider those to, you know, we're not still playing together because the music that I'm making now is just different. And, you know, the folks that played on the album are just, they're just different. But it's, you know, very thankful for each group of guys and, you know, each of the memories we're able to make together. But, you know, making music and making albums is a lot just like a book. This is right the next on. Chapter and or the next, you know, paragraph or what have you. Just stoked for it.
And speaking of books, did you read Rob Halford's book?
I haven't read it yet.
You're in it, man.
I've heard that I'm in it.
Yeah, he speaks very highly of you and the whole experience of playing with you on American Idol. So I don't know how much of that you had. Like, did you request that Priest come on the show? Like, how responsible were you for bringing Judas Priest onto the show? I would think very.
Yeah, well, I chose from a cleared list of songs of three pages that I looked through three times, and only on the fourth time looking through did I realize that You've Got Another Thing Coming was on that list, and that was to perform that on the top 24 night of American Idol for the top 12 guys. And, you know, I just said, this, I want to sing this, and the producers were like, what the fuck is a Judas Priest, and why is it on our list?
Right.
And they literally told me that. I heard them. And So I just stuck with my guns and saying that, and heard, you know, got a note back from them like a week later of like, that was great. You know, thank you for singing our song. And I just kind of kept it in the back of my mind that if I get to perform with somebody at the finale, I want to perform with Judas Priest. And so they came back and they said, yeah, they want to perform with you. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. So I went and had dinner with them the night before rehearsal and the show. And it was wonderful. We had tea. We had lobster or crab or something. And it was just great. KK Downing had just left the band and a month before. And this was now Richie Faulkner's first live performance.
Yeah, Rob mentions that in the book, that his first performance with the band was literally in front of like 40 million people on American Idol with you. So crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really... you know, another blessing to have been a part of, you know, Priest history.
Absolutely.
That's really wonderful for me. I wear that as a badge, but I don't wear the vest. Right. I keep it hung up somewhere. But yeah, so I played with Priest and kept in contact with them. And, you know, after I wrote the title track of the album, after I wrote the song, The Beast Awakens, the first person I texted it to was Rob.
Wow, cool.
To get his thoughts on it. And we haven't had a relationship like that, you know, in the 10 years since Idol, but you know, I've always sent him Christmas cards and you know, kept him you know, and just somebody I check in with here and there, but when it came time for this album, you know, it was that of that vibe, you know, of that style of music.
Right.
So it, you know, it's something that I really wanted to, if I can get his approval, if I could get him on it, that was, you know, that was a wish and a want. But, you know, he was doing his album or finishing his book and recording the audio for the book. It's very much like the situation with Jericho, you know, trying to get him to be in the video and then working around it because he's so busy, which I'm just blessed to have these guys, you know, have Chris sing on a song and provide a little vocal intro for a visualizer video that I edit on my computer, you know,
right.
And
right.
To have Rob just like send text messages. It's like incredible.
Amazing.
It just is, you know, even if they weren't famous guys, like just to have people that are that gracious and that kind with their time, you know, despite of how busy they are, that's just awesome.
Well, James, I know we do have to let you go right now, but yeah, The Beast Awakens, man, February 12th via Frontiers. And listen, I talked to people. I'm friends with Joe over at Loudwire. And I mean, he texted me a couple weeks ago. He was like, man, have you heard these Durbin songs? They're really good. So, I mean, people are excited by this. I'm one of them. And man, it's what we need, you know, classic metal in the style of Priest and Dio and Maiden. So thank you for this record.
Awesome. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate that very much. Glad people like you are catching on to it and giving it a chance. You know, I just implore people to, if they like the style of music, to, you know, go into it with that, but to, you know, try to not give yourself an expectation of what you're wanting to hear from it. If you do that, I'm sure that you'll find something in it. And if not, thank you for taking the moment and the time out of your day to listen to it, to see if you will like it. I do appreciate even those little things. Those are little victories. And, you know, there's a lot of artists out there and there's a lot of people trying to get everybody's attention with their music. You know, you've only got two ears, so it's pretty difficult to listen to two different songs at the same time. So
right on.
I do appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate the time. We'll get this up in about a week.
Awesome. You got it, brother. I appreciate it very much. Thanks for taking the time.
You have a great night.
Have a good you too. Bye.
Stay safe. Bye. All right, that's going to do it for today's show. Remember, you can support us by using our Amazon links. They're all linked through markstriegel.net. You can go there and get those. And please support us on Patreon. That's where I need you guys. Patreon, Patreon, Patreon. I can't say it enough. $2 a month. It's like nothing, man. Man, a cup of coffee is more than that. Just $2 a month would make me so happy. I'd be so grateful. Of course, using the Amazon links is another way to support the show. And the other way is to just tweet it out. Tweet out the guys in Silvertomb. Let them know you heard Kenny's interview. Tweet James Durbin. Tag them, you know, on social media. Let them know that you really enjoyed what you heard on Talking Metal.
And yeah, you can also leave a PayPal donation if you just want to do a one-time thing. That is also up on markstriegel.net, markstriegl.net. Thank you, my friends. I will talk to you next time. Thanks to Emily, Kenny, and James for joining me here on the Talking Metal Podcast. Good night. We'll be right back.